Stand by for the fastest 60 minutes in Jewish radio. It's time for the Jewish Experience. Hi, everyone, and welcome back. And here we are at the last portion of the Torah this Shabbos morning. Before we begin a brand new book of the Torah called Shmos, or Names. Of course, some people call it Exodus. Hi, I'm Hirsch DeLynn, and you are tuned in to Pittsburgh's only Jewish radio program, The Jewish Experience. Parsha this week is Vayechi, and he lived. It talks about the last years of Yaakov's life in Egypt and how it was the best years. He lived them in peace. Rabbi Goldwasser will have more on that subject in his segment coming right up. And Yaakov calls all his sons to bless them, assigning each a role in life that their offspring will take and develop into a great nation. Yaakov passes on, buried in Hebron at the same place as his forefathers, the cave of Machpelah, and is accompanied by his family and a large contingent of Egyptians, unheard of at that time. His son Joseph also passes on at the end of this parsha at the ripe old age of 110. But even though he asked to be buried in Israel, his bones will have to wait until the entire nation is led out by Moses, coming up in the weeks ahead. You'll definitely want to stay tuned each week for all the exciting details. And speaking of details, our staff is back to usher in the Peace of Shabbos with the best in educational Jewish radio, with Musical Moish, Rabbi Meir Goldwasser, Rabbi Yosef Eisen, and Ms. Devorah DeLynn. So sit back and enjoy 60 minutes of the best Jewish radio in Pennsylvania. We'll have your community announcements and mazel tovs, along with current news fresh from Israel National Radio, coming up in the half hour. Our special guest today is Rabbi Hananya Weissman, who's an educator who has written four books and many articles on the issues of standards in Jewish education. That's an issue on the minds of day school parents in Pittsburgh and everywhere else. So keep cooking and keep listening. And don't forget to take time now to make a resolution to support Jewish radio in Pittsburgh. Sponsor your favorite segment each week. Call Jewish Experience at Verizon.net or call us at 412-979-5770 and we'll let you in on all the details. And if you want to hear us on the air each week, you should write a check now and become a partner in our exciting endeavor with you. Rabbi Goldwasser's Torah lesson, sponsored by Reb Yisrael Zerlo, and the Community News and Announcement Center is sponsored by Kramer's Windows and Glass Block. Popular Feminine Perspective is available for sponsorship, as is Rabbi Eisen's Moment in Jewish History. Rabbi Goldwasser's popular story segment has just become available. Remember, if you enjoy listening to our program, your financial support is critical to make this program available to you in your homes each week. The entire staff works hard to bring you the best in Jewish programming, but we rely on your generous support. And as always, we thank our regular sponsors, Burton Hirsch Funeral Home, Next Generation Financial Services, First Mariner Bank, Pittsburgh Simcha Orchestra, led by our own Moshe Bakar, and Artistic Photography. Don't forget to ask for a special gift of a beautiful refrigerator magnet. Yours free if you call us at 412-979-5770. Or you can send us an email at jewishexperience@verizon.net. Don't forget, candlelighting time this week is no later than 4:49 p.m.
Adam lechol Adam Adonai. Yogati velo imatzafia. Yo yo yogati velo imatzafi.
Rabbi Goldwasser's Parsha segment this week is sponsored by Reb Yisrael Zerlo in honor of the Refua Shlema of Klal Yisrael for the healthy recovery of all the people of Israel. And now, our resident rabbi, Rabbi Meir Goldwasser.
This week's Torah portion, Parshas Vayechi, concludes the book of Bereishis. The Sedra begins, Vayechi Yaakov, the Eretz Mitzrayim, that Yaakov lived in the land of Egypt Shva Esrei Shana, for 17 years. The word Vayechi, it has a numerical value, a gematria of 34. The years that Yaakov lived were the first 17 years of Yosef's life, when Yaakov was together with all of his children, including Yosef, and the last 17 years of his life, where he lived in Mitzrayim. Altogether, these years equal 34. And these are the years that Yaakov truly lived. It is interesting that the Torah tells us that Yaakov lived in the land of Mitzrayim, in the land of Egypt. This does not mean merely physically living, but these years, we are told, the years that Yaakov lived in Mitzrayim were the very best years of Yaakov's life. This is difficult to understand. After all, before Yaakov came to Mitzrayim, Yaakov lived in the land of Israel. There, he and his children were shepherds. They were totally involved in a spiritual world, devoting themselves entirely to godliness. When Yaakov came with his family to Egypt, Yaakov was now in a land which was the antithesis of holiness, where idol worship was rampant And the people around lived a very degrading life. How could the Torah refer to these years that Yaakov and his family lived in such a place as the very best years of Yaakov's life? The answer is the following. When Yaakov saw that he, together with his entire family, lived in a strange land, lived in an area which was not conducive to spiritual life, and Yaakov saw that nevertheless he and his children were able to flourish, were able to continue their lives as godly people, these years were truly the very best of Yaakov's life. And Yaakov's living in Mitzrayim, together with his children, especially Yosef, who was involved with conducting the business affairs of Mitzrayim, and yet all of them lived a spiritual life, a life true to godliness. This gives us, their descendants, the power to conquer all of the distractions and obstacles that are in our path in Golus, and gives us the strength to be able to bring Moshiach speedily.
All around us, life is moving faster and faster. Things are changing all the time, and it's a comfort to know in your time of need that at Burton Hirsch Funeral Home, the Jewish tradition continues. Burton Hirsch Funeral Home has served the Pittsburgh Jewish community since 1947 and has recently remodeled its entire facility to better serve you. Burton Hirsch Funeral Directors are members of the Jewish Funeral Directors Association and work closely with area rabbis to ensure that your needs as a Jewish family are totally met. Their attentive and compassionate guidance results in treating each family as their own. I personally met with Michael Hilgefort. And did you know that Burton Hirsch Funeral Home is even involved with community educational programs to ensure that Jewish families know what to do to have a proper burial? In your time of special need, call Squirrel Hill's only Jewish funeral home, Burton Hirsch, at 412-521-2600. That's 412-521-2600. They welcome your request to visit and tour their state-of-the-art facilities. Burton Hirsch Funeral Home, proud sponsors of the Jewish Experience, It's time for A Moment in Jewish History with the author of Miraculous Journey, Rabbi Yosef Eisen.
The best-known non-diplomatic righteous Gentile was the famous German Oskar Schindler, whose efforts in saving 1,200 Polish Jews became immortalized in the book and film Schindler's List. However, there are many lesser-known individuals who saved Jews in many fascinating ways. Anton Schmidt was one of the very few German military personnel actively engaged in saving Jews. A sergeant in the Wehrmacht, stationed in Vilna, Schmidt, in charge of 300 Jewish laborers, quickly gained their affection and confidence. Shocked by the mass killings, Schmidt decided in late 1941 to do whatever he could to help Jews survive. Managing to release imprisoned Jews, he surreptitiously supplied food and provisions to Jews inside the Vilna ghetto. During Nazi raids on the ghetto, Schmidt hid Jews in the cellars of three houses under his supervision. Schmidt also became personally involved with leading figures of the Jewish underground in Vilna, cooperating with them, allowing them to sleep and plan activities in his home. As part of the divine plan, Schmidt was able to travel freely in the course of his military responsibilities, which included collecting straggling German soldiers and reassigning them to new units. Therefore, he was able to drive disguised Jews to other ghettos, such as Warsaw, to warn Jews of Nazi atrocities. Schmidt also sent Jews to other ghettos that were safer than Vilna. Tragically, Schmidt was arrested in 1942, court-martialed, and executed. Eberhard Helmrich, a major in the German army, was the commander of a large farm in Poland. Employing nearly 200 Jews from the Drohobycz ghetto, he saved many of them from arrests and the periodic roundups. On several occasions, Helmrich hid Jews in his home, obtaining the release of others by claiming they were needed for the farm's proper functioning. When he learned that all the Jews in the region were to be liquidated, Helmrich was horrified. He and his wife conceived an original idea, providing false credentials to Jewish girls to pose as Poles or Ukrainians and attain work in Germany. In Berlin, Helmrich's wife found jobs for these girls, making sure there were no Poles or Ukrainians in the houses in which they were employed. Altogether, the Helmrichs saved more than a dozen girls. After the war, they were asked about their motivations. "We were fully aware of the risks, but we decided that it would be better for our children to have dead parents than cowardly parents. From then on, it was comparatively easy. We figured that once we saved two people, we'd be even with Hitler if we were caught, and every person beyond that would put us one ahead." This is Rabbi Yosef Eisen wishing you a very happy and healthy Shabbos.
This week's news segment is brought to you by Kramer's Windows and Glass Block. When your requirements call for replacement windows or glass block, call Ed at 412-848-2262. That's 412-848-2262.
This is Israel National Radio, the only independent news talk network in the Middle East, with news every half hour, on the half hour. Now, from the Israel National Radio newsroom, here's Ernie Singer.
United States President George W. Bush has backed a proposal by German Chancellor Angela Merkel for a new meeting of the Middle East Quartet regarding Israel and the PLO. Germany holding the presidency of the European Union right now. The two leaders agreeing during talks in Washington that Russia, the EU, the U.S., and the United Nations should play a larger role in the Middle East peace process. Israeli diplomats expect U.S. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice to visit at the end of the coming week. Dr. Rice met with European Union Foreign Policy Chief Javier Solana Thursday on her plans. Congress voting Bush $86.4 million to strengthen the security forces of PLO Chairman Mahmoud Abbas embattled by Hamas in the Gaza Strip. Fatah leaders calling on Abu Mazen to go beyond his call for early elections by disbanding the Hamas-led PLO legislature and declaring an emergency government. Abbas letting PLO Prime Minister Ismail Haniyeh of Hamas do the talking as the two leaders decided to pull gunmen from the streets of Gaza in an attempt to stop fighting that killed and wounded dozens during the middle of this past week. Support for Abbas not discussed during the news conference held by Prime Minister Ehud Olmert and Egyptian President Mohammed Hosni Mubarak following their meeting in Sharm el-Sheikh on Thursday. The Al-Quds Brigades of Islamic Jihad said the rockets used on Sderot and Kibbutz Nir Am on Friday morning were the Quds 3 variety. A statement by the terrorist group said the attacks were in retaliation for what it called Israel's crimes, including the routine arrest operation in Ramallah north of Jerusalem on Thursday, which ended up killing as many as 6 Arabs who attacked Israeli troops. The incident detracting from the Olmert-Husni Mubarak meeting, the Prime Minister off to China this coming week, if he did intend to transfer Defense Minister Amir Peretz to the social welfare portfolio in favor of former Defense Minister Ehud Barak, that intent has been compromised by television coverage of the story, Channel 2 saying an announcement was expected this coming Friday after the return from China, pending the verdict in the unwanted kiss case against suspended Justice Minister Chaim Ramon. Some Labor Party leaders furious over the report. Knesset faction leader Yoram Marciano calling it spin from Olmert's communications advisors who are trying to deflect attention from probes of corruption involving the Prime Minister. Marciano noting the timing of the rumors after Labor helped Olmert pass the budget. At the same time, Labor Central Committee approval for the switch is expected due to the influence of former Defense Minister Benjamin Ben-Eliezer, who has just endorsed Barak for Labor leader. Peretz's inexperience in defense matters seen as one reason behind Olmert's low approval rating. Incidentally, even a year ago, Olmert came in last in a poll on his suitability to replace former Prime Minister Ariel Sharon ahead of the stroke that has left Sharon in a coma. While current polls leave his Kadima party as the top vote-getter, Foreign Minister Tzipi Livni is the individual favorite to be Prime Minister, followed by former Defense Minister Shaul Mofaz. One poll says that the Olmert administration will end this year, and only 36% believe he will be able to serve out his full term. The Yes to the Elderly publication has charged the Pensioners Party with surrendering demands that were secured in the coalition agreement. The party won 7 mandates promising that retirees would receive higher pensions and monthly stipends. The head of the Yes to the Elderly organization representing old people, Natan Lavon, says that the Pensioners Party will lose its standing in the Knesset if it does not fulfill its campaign promises. The party says it's taking care of the issues and that some of them already have been resolved. The arrest of the head of the tax authority, his predecessor, and other senior officials this week represents a worsening of the image of Israel's government as being corrupt, according to United Press International. Hebrew University political science professor Menachem Hoffman telling UPI, Israel was once among the 10 most honest countries in the world, but has dropped to number 34 in a list of about 130 countries. This Shabbat marking a week since the execution of former Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein, a number of viewpoints on the event and its place on the Jewish calendar, on demand on the internet at IsraelNationalRadio.com. Shabbat Tet Zion of the 16th of Tevet on the Jewish calendar, and the weather forecast, occasional rain over the north and center of the country, accompanied by strong winds, isolated thunderstorms, a drop in temperature, and flooding in low-lying areas, as well as snow on Mount Hermon spreading to the northern Negev during the day on Friday. On Shabbat, the storm weakening during the day, with occasional showers getting stronger at night. Local flooding expected on Sunday. On Monday, the storm is expected to lighten up before ending in the afternoon. In Jerusalem, Friday, 9 degrees centigrade, 48 Fahrenheit. The Red Sea, 18 degrees centigrade, 64 Fahrenheit. The Dead Sea, 17 degrees centigrade, 63 Fahrenheit. Ernie Singer, Israel National Radio.
We want to wish our brothers and sisters in the Holy Land a very peaceful and restful Shabbat.
Quiet turn of the secular year, the Mazel Tovs this week, Miss Batya Moses and Mr. Lee Moses on the bar mitzvahs of their sons Zalman, Raphael, and Yaakov, and Beth and Jeffrey Elinoff on the bris milah of their son, and of course Bernice Elinoff on the bris milah of her grandson, Andrew Cole Elinoff. Take a look at some events around the community. Mayor Luke Ravenstahl will have his first opportunity to meet the Pittsburgh Jewish community at the Yeshiva School's annual dinner to be held January 16th, Tuesday evening, 6 p.m. at the Hilton Hotel. Judy O'Connor will be the honorary chair, along with dinner chair, Jewish Healthcare Foundation President Karen Feinstein. For reservations, call Rita Unger at 412-422-7300, extension 0. 412-422-7300, extension 0. Starting January 8th, Rosh Kollel Rabbi Levi Langer will present his series on the prophets Monday evening, 7 p.m. at Congregation Poli Zedek. Classes are free of charge and do not require a reservation. They're for men and women at all levels. A group viewing of the film Ushpizin at Beth Shalom Synagogue Ballroom Sunday evening, January 7th at 7 p.m. It's going to be followed by a discussion led by Yaron and Rotem Weiner. The film is appropriate for youth as well as adult viewing. For additional information, please call David Katz at 412-421-2411. I actually saw that film, and it's quite a film, extremely well done and very popular. And if you haven't seen it, you should go see it. Breakfast Club Sunday mornings, 8 a.m. for men and women at the Kollel Jewish Learning Center. The meeting of Food Addicts and Recovery Anonymous meets at Shari Torah every Sunday evening from 7 to 8:30. And going to be two special speakers from out of town that's going to visit the group. 8:45 a.m. Wednesday morning at Shari Torah. That's this Wednesday at 8:45 Wednesday morning. This program is a recovery group for people who cannot control their eating or their weight. Very successful. They're growing. That's why they're bringing in these two speakers. So if you want more information, call Elon at 412-422-2224. You'd like to have your Mazel Tovs on the program? It's easy. You can call us at 412-979-5770, or even easier, just drop us an email at jewishexperience@verizon.net by noon on Monday for that week's program. Or you could even make it on Tuesday, but most of the time by Monday. Candlelighting time this week, no later than 4:49 p.m.
Simin toy, the mazel mazel toy. Yeah, hey, boy, you're the call you saw. Simin toy, the mazel mazel toy. Hey, boy, you're the call you saw. Simin toy, the mazel mazel toy. Yeah, hey, boy, you're the call you saw. Simin toy, the mazel mazel toy. Hey, boy, you're the call you saw. Kasita na ye, kalay kaye, kalay kasta. I can't know if it's a lie.
Excited today to have a Jewish day school educator who's the author of four books and founder of EndTheMadness.org and has written a number of articles on standards in Jewish education, Rabbi Hananya Weissman. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
And thank you for taking time to be with us today. You had written an article recently for the Jewish Press, Rethinking Standards in Jewish Education, which has frankly been making the rounds in the Pittsburgh Jewish community. And there's a few people that have asked me to have you on this afternoon. Just in general, you have been teaching in Jewish day schools. You have this this background, and you've seen some of this thing go on. How long have you been teaching this, and what has gotten you involved in standards? What made you think about standards in Jewish education?
Well, to answer your first question, I've been teaching for 5+ years, and what got me thinking about the topic was actually prior to my teaching years. The only reason why I entered the world of chinuch in the first place was because growing up as a student, I saw many problems with it, and I really wanted to try to solve some of these problems, and I felt the best way to do that was to go into teaching.
Okay, great. And I noticed that in the schools, you had brought up a number of things which we want to talk about that we actually see here in Pittsburgh. You talk about students who have fried out, as we say, have dropped, students in general that have not been able to, so to speak, play the middle road of the yeshiva game, as it were, because we have some students that are in yeshivas here in Pittsburgh that do have special needs, also are interested in different things. Some are way ahead of the, you know, are accelerated.
Right.
How do you handle this kind of thing in a school with a limited budget?
Well, I think, first of all, the schools need to realize that there is no one-size-fits-all way of teaching. Every student is different. There's no such thing as any classroom. If you have as many as two students in a classroom, they're guaranteed to have two different styles of learning, two different ways of thinking. And if you try to package all of learning just in one way, you're guaranteed to lose students. So I think the first thing people need to realize is that every human being is different, and you need to teach them in a different way. Now, obviously, if you have a classroom of 20 students or 30 students, you're teaching one class. Nevertheless, a teacher needs to be aware of the fact that different methods are going to work for different students and different methods are not going to work for different students. So there needs to be a level of awareness and sensitivity for the fact that people are different.
Well, it's easy to say, and a lot of people, I would say educators, would want to do that. But how do you recommend actually doing that in a situation where you have maybe a handful doing this and a handful doing that? Is there a way around that?
Well, I'll give you a perfect example from my own experience.
Right.
I've taught
okay.
students with different levels of learning issues, and they've all been lumped together in the same classroom. there was one unit that we were working on in Chumash, and I gave an assessment, and the assessment was to create a marriage guidebook. We were learning the story of Adam and Chava, the role and nature of men and women, and the assessment was to create a manual for marriage based on the teachings that we had learned in class. So some students made a poster, some made an actual pamphlet, like you go to the doctor's office and see like 10 things you need to know about marriage. They just approached it in different ways. So it was one assignment, but there was an openness for students to go about that in different ways, just to show me that they learned the stuff that we did in class.
Do you recommend, for example, using computers to there's been this big move now with homeschooling and children using computers to learn the English part of this and save the money, so to speak, in the yeshivas for the Limud HaKodesh, for the Hebrew studies. Is that something you've seen, or you've seen it work?
I think there are two sides of the coin. I mean, obviously, it's a powerful method of learning. On the other hand, something that's new and big and flashy tends to grab people, and they'll throw money at it, and we need to judge, whether it's really worth the money. I think it can be helpful for some students, but we've been learning Torah for thousands of years, and we got along fine without it. So I don't think it's necessary. I don't think it's the answer to all of the world's problems. I think in a limited way for some students it can be helpful, but it's not something that's really a necessity.
Okay, well, I was really more talking about not the Limud HaKodesh, but the English side. In other words, they're trying to, you had mentioned in your writing that schools on limited budgets have problems paying teachers on time, for example. They'll pay the custodian, but they may not pay the teacher, and they expect the teacher to go without. Well, what I'm saying here is if you have that kind of limited budget, why not spend the money on your rebbes and then take the best English teachers that you can get, so to speak, which come with some of these programs online, because there's usually local teachers assigned, let them learn the English in the school, and then take your limited resources and kind of congregate them on the Torah side. And have you seen that? I mean, I just wonder if you ever seen
that. I have not seen that. I think that's an idea that really should be looked at.
Yeah, we have been talking about it here in the Pittsburgh community, but it's tough to change where you're going and what you're doing. But I think it's something that has merit and may want to be.
Listen, I'm in the business of change as sort of a social critic, and the answer that I always have for people when they tell me that change is hard is I tell them that staying the same is also hard. Like there's a price to pay by not paying the price of changing.
Yeah, exactly, and I agree with that. Now let's move to another subject here, and that is and we have this also in Pittsburgh, the students that because the schools have not adapted, maybe because it's just the way it is, but they leave the schools sometimes in the middle, sometimes after they graduate, and then they really throw off their Yiddishkeit, sometimes in a family that's otherwise very observant, and other people in the family are very observant. How do you deal with that?
Well, first of all, I think that for every student that drops out of Judaism, there are a lot of people who stick with it for social reasons or family reasons, but they're not inspired Jews. And
okay.
and I think the number of Jews who are dropping out is really just a warning flag for everybody else. I mean, it's not like you have two classes of Jews, the Jews who make it and the Jews who don't, but even the Jews in the middle are not passionate Jews necessarily.
Right.
And I think that's one of the great flaws of the Jewish day school system, is we're not giving students a passion for Judaism. They don't understand what it means to be a Jew. They don't understand the role of a Jew in this world, and they don't have an appreciation for it. I mean, if you ask a Jewish kid, if you found out today that you weren't Jewish, what would be the first thing you do? I would like the answer to be I would run to a Beis Din and become a Jew.
Right.
And if the answer is something else, then we have not, reached that kid.
Yeah, exactly. So, but again, we know it's happening. What is your recommendation on how to get these kids back?
I think we need to teach authentic Judaism and not Judaism that's driven by an agenda. I think we need to open up the Torah and show people what it really means to be a Jew. People don't know that. I'm really teaching people the basics. Chumash and Rashi, for example. I don't think it's possible for somebody to really learn even just straight Chumash and Rashi and not be inspired.
Well,
but it's something that's really not taught.
Okay. In most of the day schools here, I would think they're doing that.
They tend to do it when the kids are young, but once the kids reach fifth grade, it's Mishnah, it's Gemara, and then, you know, Chumash is basically it's Var Torah on Friday or Parsha Sheet or something like that. It's not something that's taken seriously enough.
Yeah, and I guess there's also ways to be a little creative, and if the teacher itself is not passionate, then that's going to transmit to the student, I would think.
Yeah, listen, I mean, I don't want to toot my own horn, but my first year of teaching as a full-time teacher, I was actually an English teacher. I wasn't teaching Jewish studies in the morning, but every Friday I gave the kids a Dvar Torah from the Parsha. They were fifth graders, and I had one student who was in my sixth grade class the following year when I was also a Rebbe in the morning, and he actually became a Baal Tshuva, and he told me that the reason for that was he was inspired by the Divrei Torah on Friday, which are just things from Chumash.
Sure, but it's in your presentation. I mean, I think that has more to it than anything else, and I think part of that, although it probably shouldn't be, but part of that is if they're the last on the list, so to speak, to be taken care of, that may have an effect on how they perform in the classroom. I may be wrong, but I'm just saying that may have an effect.
Well, yeah, it's true, but I think the bottom line is that the Torah can sell itself. You know, we just need people to not mess things up. It's kind of like the quarterback in football, where we tell them, like, you don't have to go out and win the game, just don't blow the game.
Right.
I mean, I think it's really the same thing in teaching Torah. The Torah is so beautiful and so vast, and there's something in there for everybody. Just teach it the way it is, and don't mess things up, and kids will love it.
Yeah. Well, that's great, and we are running out of time. So as we wrap it up, what is your advice now to the day school educators that are listening to the program about how to, so to speak, solve these problems by making their education more exciting and inspiring the kids?
Okay, very quickly, a list of bullet points. Number one, as I wrote in the article, treat everybody with Derek Eretz. It should be real, whether the parents have money or they don't have money, whether the administrator feels they have something to offer the school or they don't. Everybody should be treated with special care. Number two, teach authentic Judaism. Number three, there needs to be an understanding of what it means to be a Jew, and children should be taught to have pride in that mission. Number three, I think it would be helpful to open up the books, not only because of the fact that there would be greater accountability, but also donors, I think, would have an easier time giving money to schools if they really knew how that money is being spent, and hopefully every penny of it would be spent wisely. Donors and schools need to take care of the teachers first. I mean, donors tend to put all of their money in buildings because they're able to put their name on a building. They can't put their name on a teacher. However, if they really want to make an impact, the impact starts with the teachers. Schools should focus on producing informed thinking Jews. They shouldn't be worried about making a Gadol or a Nobel Prize winner. Just make a good kosher Jew who's happy to be a Jew, and good things will happen from there. And finally, the school should be driven by the pursuit of serving Hashem, not by money and image, as many schools are. I think most people in Vav Nechinuch are passionate. They're doing it for the right reasons, but they tend to become, you know, over time, they tend to follow the money and follow the image, and they lose sight of why they entered the world of chinuch in the first place, which is to teach children and serving God. And it's kind of a scary statement, but in former times, when the schools were run by great people and they had to deal with the government, it was not always, you know, eager to let Jews teach Torah, as we're fortunate to be able to do here, and they were forced to make a compromise. They were willing to close down the school rather than make a compromise that they felt was not proper. Now, I'm not saying school should close down, but they should really think, if they're making a compromise for money or for image, then they need to think whether they're serving Hashem or whether they're making a deal with the devil.
Well, that's pretty heavy-duty stuff, and I'm sure with all those bullet points, we're probably going to have to run through the archives a couple of times to get it all. But Rabbi Weissman, thank you very much for taking time to join us here this afternoon on the Jewish Experience Program. Jewish Day School Educator. He's author of four books, founder of endthemagnus.org, and, of course, he writes a lot of articles for the Jewish press. So, Rabbi Hananya Weissman, thank you again for being with us. Have a great Shabbos.
Okay, well, thank you for having me on.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Now it's time to take a look at the feminine side of things with the feminine perspective. Here's Miss Devorah DeLynn.
If you take a look around, you will notice that there is a large amount of observant Jews today that were not frum or observant from birth. These very special people discovered Torah and mitzvahs later on in life and are admired and held in great esteem because they had the courage to change their lives completely and return to Judaism. They are referred to as Baalei Teshuvah, literally, masters of repentance and return. Only a couple decades ago, returnees were not so common. The average American Jew was the product of a European parent who had left the Jewish identity on the boat coming over. However, the Lubavitcher Rebbe changed all that when he established Brooklyn, New York as the headquarters of Lubavitch Hasidim. He sent emissaries to the most vacant, isolated spots in the world to bring the light of Torah there. Armed with a verse in Devarim, Deuteronomy, that states, "You will return to God and listen to Him with all your heart and soul," he created a network of Lubavitch families, women and children included, that now strive every day to bring lost Jews back to their roots. Even after the Lubavitcher Rebbe's passing over a decade ago, the emissaries, or shluchim in Hebrew, have continued his holy work. In fact, the Baal Teshuvah movement, as this operation was later named, has expanded almost 30% since the Rebbe's passing. It has become a worldwide Jewish outreach movement. More than 3,700 emissary couples work in more than 100 countries worldwide. Since 1995, more than 400 shluchim, emissaries, were assigned to new posts, and more than 500 new Chabad institutions have been established, bringing the total to nearly 2,600 institutions, including seminaries, day camps, and schools, etc., worldwide. According to headquarters, almost 1 million children participate in Chabad activities in 1999. But you don't have to camp out in the middle of China to be a shliach. Every day, each person is on shlichus, is on a mission to help lost Jews return to their roots. It might be handing out a pamphlet on Murray Avenue, or even just wishing a good Shabbos to somebody. Every little act is putting us closer to our goal of helping every Jew return. In Parshas Vayechi, the last portion in the book of Bereishis, Genesis, Yaakov is blessing his sons as he prepares to pass on. Reuven, as the oldest child, gets the first blessing. But if one looks at the context of this blessing, it seems that instead of blessing Reuven, Yaakov is chiding him for his past misdeeds. Of course Yaakov wouldn't want to leave his firstborn on a negative note. Well, to understand this answer, we have to understand that the Torah explains things on many levels. The deeper meaning here is that Yaakov wasn't taking Reuven to task. Rather, he was praising him. Well, what for? Reuven had committed an act of disrespect toward his father, but when he realized his mistake, he immediately did teshuvah and asked Hashem and his father for forgiveness. This is an extremely noteworthy trait, as it takes a great amount of courage and trust to admit to a mistake and rectify it. Our sages teach us that Reuven was the first Baal teshuvah. As such, his blessing from Yaakov is the ode to all Baalei teshuvos. The verse says, "Reuven b'chayri ata k'chi v'reishis oni." The word oni here refers to the word avon, sin. Then it says, yeser se'ez v'yeser az, the excellence of dignity and the excellence of power. This means that though Reuven did sin, he did teshuvah right away so that his status was elevated to that of higher than a high priest, the Kohen Gadol. Later on it says, pachas kamayim al tosar, you are unstable like water. Unlike water which flows in a clear defined path, Reuven's path to repentance was not clear and visible. We learn from here that nobody is ever born a Baal Teshuvah. Each person has to reach deep within themselves to find the power and courage to trust in Hashem and change your lives. I would just like to say a big thank you to my parents, who happen to be Baal Teshuvah, for instilling within me and my siblings the unique love and trust for Hashem that only a true Baal Teshuvah can have. Have a good Shabbos.
Search and
Now it's time for another classic story from our master storyteller, Rabbi Meir Goldwasser.
This is a story about the Tzemach Tzedek. Whether awake or in his dreams, the Rebbe would sometimes see his grandfather, the Alter Rebbe, who had already passed away, but brought him solutions to his questions in learning. On one occasion, he was in his study learning and had a big question and did not know how to answer it. He yearned to see his grandfather, but this was not granted, and this made him deeply distressed. A long time passed. One morning, the Rebbe rose early to go to shul. On his way through the marketplace, he was stopped by a simple, pious Jew who made a living from his petty transactions there. It was a market day, and the man asked for a loan of 3 rubles until the evening, or until the next morning. The Tzemach Tzedek asked him to come to his home after he came back from davening in shul, and then he would gladly give him the money. When he arrived in shul, the Rebbe prepared himself for davening. He took out his talis and put it over his head to wrap himself with, when the request of the man came to his mind. It had not been right to ask him to wait until after davening, because today was market day, and in the meantime he could have earned himself some money. The Rebbe immediately removed his talis, went home, took 5 rubles, and set out in search of the man. He eventually found him, though with great difficulty, because the market was filled with many peasants, with their wagons loaded with merchandise from the surrounding villages. He gave the man the money, and, this little deed done, he returned to shul to daven. No sooner had he wrapped himself in his talis and put on his tefillin than he saw before him the countenance of his grandfather, the Alter Rebbe, who answered his question he had had on his learning. He also added, when a man gives a loan to his fellow man with all his heart and does a favor lovingly, in fulfilling the mitzvah of ve'ohavta l'reyacha kamocha, to love your friend as yourself, for such a man the gates of heaven are open wide. This is Rabbi Meir Goldwasser wishing you all a good Shabbos.
As we wrap up the first show of 2007, it's like a couple of reminders in here. Mayor Ruka Levenstahl, First Opportunity, Pittsburgh Jewish Community, annual dinner, January 16th, 6 p.m. at the Hilton Hotel. Don't forget to call Rita Unger at 412-422-7300, extension 0 for more information. January 8th, Rosh Kollel, Levi Langer, present his series on the prophets, Monday evening, 7 p.m., Congregation Polizetic. Group viewing of the film Mushbis in the Beth Shalom Synagogue. Called David Katz at 412-421-2411. Breakfast Club Sunday mornings, 8 a.m. At the Kollel Jewish Learning Center. Mooting of Food Addicts and Recovery Anonymous, Shari Torah, every Sunday evening. Don't forget, this Wednesday they're going to have a speaker at 8:45 a.m. For more information, call Ilana at 412-422-2224. And if you'd like to have your Mazel Tovs on our program, you can call 412-979-5770. Or you can email jewishexperience@verizon.net by noon on Monday for that week's program. And I want to thank Rabbi Hananya Weissman for bringing us up to date on the state of Jewish day school education and what can be done to make it better. And, of course, our faithful and cutting-edge staff, Rabbi Meir Goldwasser, Rabbi Yosef Eisen, MusicalMoist.com, Dr. Michael Shulman, Mr. Ward Lynn, and, of course, our engineer, Jeremiah Bossenstein, for another outstanding show. Don't forget, candlelighting time this week, no later than 4:49 p.m. It's been a ton of fun, but you know what? I am done. Till next week, I'm Hirsch Lynn. Have a wonderful and restful Shabbat.